5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome back to On the Case, the podcast. I'm Paula Zahn. Thanks for joining us for episode 12, A Thin Disguise.
Tonight, we're on the case in Victorville, California, an upscale community 85 miles east of Los Angeles. It was here on a quiet street that a gunman stepped out of the shadows and ambushed a young mother and her boyfriend, making her two terrified daughters eyewitnesses to the attack. The investigation into the deadly shooting put police on the trail of a killer, protecting an unthinkable secret.
It was a cool night on October 11th, 1989. Carl First and his girlfriend, Kathy Paternoster, had just arrived home after running some errands with her two young daughters. Nicole was 5, and Carla had just turned 4. They had been getting ready to spend a quiet evening together as a family. Kathy's daughter, Carla First.
We had rented movies to watch. It was definitely a normal night, nothing out of the ordinary.
But as Carl drove into the driveway, he wondered why it was so dark. The garage light should have been on. Kathy's boyfriend, Carl First.
I had noticed the light was out. We always left the light on when we were gone, so when we come home, there was some sort of lighting.
Carl just assumed that the bulb had blown and parked the van. Everyone got out. Kathy's daughter, Nicole Costa.
I had got out the back of the car, and I was approached by a man dressed all in black, and he had a beard.
Nicole was so frightened, she couldn't even scream. The mysterious man quickly moved past her and snuck up behind Carl, who was unaware of the stranger approaching.
I never saw anybody. I was standing there, then the next thing, you know, bam. I was shot in the back.
Carl was a Vietnam vet and knew what it was like to be under fire.
It took the air out of me. I mean, I just dropped down to my knees. And at the time, I really couldn't hear anything else that was happening.
Then there were more gunshots.
I definitely remember one continuous, like, boom, boom, boom.
The gunman had shot Kathy twice.
I just remember being really scared. Being that young, I didn't understand the full situation.
The two little girls scrambled back into the van.
I was panicked and confused because I didn't understand at all what was going on at the time.
Carl looked up and saw the gunman coming back towards him.
When I turned to the right, he was coming around the front of the van. He kept moving my way.
The man shot Carl a second time, hitting him in the shoulder. As he moved in for the kill, Carl and his attacker came face to face for a split second.
All I saw was a hoodie and like a beard, a fake beard, without the mustache. I couldn't make out the face because of the hoodie.
It was a terrifying moment. The bearded gunman hesitated before he pulled the trigger. And Carl realized he was facing certain death.
I knew that it was going to be the end if I didn't respond. My reaction was not to beg for my life, but fight for my life. Because I had the two little girls there that I knew I had to take care of. I just knew I had to do something.
Fearing for his life, he jumped into action.
I dove at the gun. When he got close enough, from my knees, I lunged forward.
Another gunshot rang out, and instantly, Carl felt a sharp pain.
The round went off and caught me in the chest.
Gravely wounded, he continued to fight against his attacker.
And knocked him down. I had him by the ankles.
But in his weakened condition, Carl wasn't able to stop the man from fleeing the scene.
He just took off running, and I seen him run to the end of the street.
When the attack was over, Kathy was sprawled out, motionless in the driveway, lying in a pool of blood. A badly wounded Carl struggled to reach her.
I got up to go check on Kathy because I didn't see any movement. I went around to the front of the van. She was laying there. I was trying to help her.
But there was nothing he could do.
I was already spitting up blood. I couldn't even get up. I was still on my knees.
I do remember my sister and I running over to my mom. She wasn't moving. We were both yelling at her to wake up, and we were both shaking her. That image is burned into my brain.
Keith Diamond was just 17 years old at the time of the attack. He'll never forget the horrifying sounds he heard coming from his neighbor's house.
I heard gunshots. I remember the screams. Really loud, shrieking screams. I jumped up real quick and I ran down the hall, told my mom to call 911, and I ran out of the house.
He got to the driveway just moments after the shooting.
When I first ran up to it and I saw what had happened, I turned and I looked down the street and I saw a silhouette of something running away.
At that moment, Keith became acutely aware of the nightmare in front of him.
That's when I saw Carl down on his knees. I saw Kathy laying flat on her back. There was no signs of moving. I saw blood, the driveway itself.
Keith was stunned. The suburban driveway looked like a war zone.
I was just in shock. Couldn't believe it.
In the midst of the chaos, another neighbor arrived. The man happened to be a dentist and began to perform CPR on Kathy. Then Keith jumped into action and took Kathy's daughters away from the traumatic scene.
They were crying, they were screaming. So I took them across the street to the neighbor's house.
With Carla and Nicole safely at the neighbor's, Keith went back to the scene to help.
The dentist had told me to make sure that Carl stays awake, that he doesn't pass out and possibly go into shock.
But Carl was losing a lot of blood.
We did try to help apply pressure across the wounds, stopped bleeding, about all we could do until, you know, somebody got there. It felt like the paramedics took forever to get there.
Keith tried to comfort his neighbor, keeping him awake as they waited for help to arrive.
I was asking him his pain level, telling him that the ambulance had been called and they're on their way, and let him know that the girls are safe. But anything I could do to keep him interested in the conversation.
Kathy was in even worse shape than Carl. Keith worked with the dentist to try to keep her alive.
I went over and helped with chest compressions while the dentist was doing the mouth-to-mouth. Her hair was just saturated in blood, and it was obvious that she was bad.
Their frantic efforts continued until Kathy and Carl were airlifted to the hospital.
Kathy's boyfriend, Carl, first.
I had no idea what was happening. Everything was so quick. I was at that point where there was not a lot I could do.
As paramedics worked to save Kathy and Carl, police descended on the crime scene and mounted an all-out search for the gunman.
Detective Pierre Galvez.
The street was cordoned off with, you know, sheriff's units. There wasn't any medical personnel there, and there were other law enforcement officials in the yard.
As detectives began their investigation, emergency room doctors attempted to stabilize Carl, who had been shot three times. He begged them for any news about Kathy's condition.
I never was unconscious the whole time. I was fully aware of everything that was going on from that point or from what happened.
Even now, years later, Carl still remembers those desperate moments in the hospital.
They weren't able to tell me if she was alive or dead. They were telling me somebody was working on her.
Carl held out hope that somehow Kathy would survive.
I thought maybe she had a chance. I had hope, really. I had hope she was going to make it.
But despite the heroic efforts of her neighbors and emergency workers at the scene, Kathy Paternoster's wounds were fatal. She was pronounced dead on arrival. Police broke the news to Kathy's distraught boyfriend.
The officers told me that she didn't make it. And it's when I found out.
At the time, Kathy's daughters were too young to comprehend that they would never see their mother again.
Kathy's daughter, Nicole Costa.
It was tough.
Kathy's daughter, Carla First.
My sister and I, we didn't understand what death was. I didn't really realize that she'd be gone.
Meanwhile, word of the brutal attack shook the foundation of the quiet community.
They were in shock and disbelief that would happen in their neighborhood.
As news of Kathy's death spread, family and friends wondered why anyone would want to hurt the devoted mother.
Kathy's best friend, Della Slagle-Kinu.
Oh my gosh, she loved being a mother. She just loved those girls.
I remember her being very nice and gentle, definitely fun and outgoing.
Kathy's daughters try to hang on to the happier memories they have of their mother.
We went to Disneyland a lot. I just felt like she always tried to show us that she loved us.
Friends remember Kathy's easy sense of humor.
Kathy was the funniest person I'd ever met. Actually, nobody can make me laugh the way that she did. She had a very unique sense of humor. She was a very, very sweet person.
Back at the Paternoster's home, police on the scene were informed that the case was now a homicide investigation. Detective Pierre Galvez was one of the lead detectives. Neighbors told Detective Galvez they had heard five gunshots. But detectives couldn't find any shell casings. That information was significant for police.
Deputy DA John Thomas.
It told the investigators that the suspect was using a revolver.
The bullets that the medical examiner recovered from Kathy's body confirmed that suspicion.
We were told that it was a .38 caliber revolver. So that's the weapon that we were looking for.
Investigators checked for evidence that might point to a motive for the murder, but none of the obvious choices seemed to fit.
The police did a thorough search of the area and found the house that Kathy and Carl lived in was not broken into. There wasn't any indication to the police that this was in any way a robbery.
This theory became more evident after a thorough search of the property.
There were some valuable items that were left at the crime scene. So had it been a robbery, those items would have been missing.
There were signs that the attack had been premeditated. Investigators noticed that the killer had made sure that the driveway would be shrouded in darkness. He had broken the fixture that would have lighted the area where he had been hiding. It suggested that the gunman had carefully planned his attack.
Then somebody had to have broken the bulb and then placed the globe back on. It was a hit. Somebody was out to assassinate both Kathy and Carl.
It was clearly an ambush type of an attack. Whoever the suspect was waiting for the family to get back home. He was hell-bent on killing both of them.
From what they gathered through evidence and eyewitness accounts, investigators were convinced they were attacked by someone they knew. Kathy and Carl were targets, and whoever had pulled the trigger had wanted them dead.
It was a lying-in-wait situation. The assailant was dressed in dark clothing. He had disguised himself. He had gloves on. He used a revolver, so no shell casings were left at the scene. And he ran a distance away from the home.
As investigators canvassed the area, one of Kathy's neighbors came forward. The woman told police that she had seen a suspicious man just two blocks from the crime scene.
Detective Robert Terrell.
The witness stated she was driving near the crime scene when she observed a white male, 40 to 50 years old, with gray hair, a gray beard, wearing dark clothing.
She thought it was odd because he was running so fast. She didn't think the beard was real. She thought something was up.
Based on the description the neighbor had provided, authorities were convinced the gunman had made a conscious effort to conceal his identity.
She was pretty sure that it wasn't a real beard, just by the way it was hanging from the suspect's face.
As investigators continued to follow the path of the gunman, they made an interesting discovery.
We found a single latex glove in this vacant lot by itself.
Detectives concluded that the latex glove had belonged to the killer.
They saw that this glove was somewhat fresh. It hadn't been weathered in any way. The investigators thought that the suspect, as he was fleeing the scene, dropped the glove.
Investigators hoped it would help them identify the gunman.
We were hoping that that did belong to the suspect so that we could process that and maybe recover some type of evidence that would link the person that was wearing that glove to the crime.
Police believe they now knew how the brutal crime had been committed. But they still had no idea who would have wanted to kill Kathy Paternoster and Carl.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
First. On the Case, the podcast will continue in a moment.
Detectives investigating the case had no solid leads on a suspect, just a description of a mysterious man dressed in black, wearing a fake beard.
It now appeared their best chance of identifying the gunman rested on the memory of Kathy's daughters, Nicole and Carla. Detective Robert Terrell.
They're very confused, very scared.
Investigators were horrified that Kathy's daughters had been forced to witness their mother's final moments alive. But they needed to know exactly what the girls had seen. Detective Robert Terrell listened as an officer trained to work with children interviewed the two young girls.
What happened?
The bad guy came. They shot Mommy.
Nicole and Carla gave police a clear account of what happened on the night of the murder.
What struck me as being unusual for a 4 and 5 year old was their stories were pretty much consistent. Down to the black clothing, the beard, the black gun.
Then the detective asked 5-year-old Nicole if she remembered anything else about the man.
Did he say anything to you?
Yes, when I got out.
What did he say?
Hello.
He said hello to you, the bad guy did? The one with the gun?
Yeah.
Kathy's daughter, Nicole Costa.
He said, hello, Nicole.
It was a searing memory for the young girl.
I can't say I recognized him. The fact that he knew my name had scared me.
The chilling detail was a critical clue for investigators.
It was very significant, the fact that he had used the little girl's name. It told me that they knew the assailant, and he knew them.
Detectives were now certain they should be looking for someone familiar to the family. But who would want to kill Carl and Kathy, but spare the lives of her two little girls? Detectives gave careful consideration to Kathy's ex-husband, Harry. They wondered if custody of his daughter, Nicole, might have been a motive for the crime. But when Harry was questioned, they learned he was hundreds of miles away from the crime scene on the night of the murder.
Deputy DA John Thomas.
They had no indication through their investigation that Harry was in any way responsible.
As police continued to look for anyone who might have held a grudge against Kathy and Carl, they learned about a serious dispute the couple had had with a private investigator named Logan Clark.
Private detective Logan Clark.
The police originally contacted me on the Paternoster case because I was involved somehow in their lives, and they came to me to find out what I knew.
Just weeks before the shooting, Kathy fired the investigator and refused to pay him. For police, it provided a motive for murder.
They thought that there's a possibility that the private investigator had the motive to kill Kathy and Carl.
Plus, Logan Clark fit the description that was given to investigators.
The descriptions that Nicole and Carl gave of the man did match the description of the private investigator.
When police confronted Clark, he admitted there had been a falling out, but he denied having anything to do with the shooting.
I said, are you out of your mind? Are you really out of your mind? Do you think I would actually kill them? Why would I do that? Why would you even ask me that question?
Detectives asked Clark if he owned a revolver similar to the murder weapon.
The police asked me if I owned guns. I did own guns. I had a .38.
When investigators turned up the pressure, Clark got angry.
I told them I never fired a gun at Carl or Kathy. They owed me money, but I like my clients alive so that they can pay the bill. I would have no reason to kill them.
Clark claimed he was nowhere near Kathy's house on the night of the murder.
We were on another case, and I had numerous agents to corroborate where I was. I told the law enforcement numerous times that they were wasting their time with me.
Investigators looked into Logan Clark's alibi and discovered it was ironclad. Detectives feared they were back to square one. But then, Clark dropped a bombshell that would change the course of the entire investigation. Clark asked detectives if they looked into why Kathy had hired him in the first place. He said she needed the private investigator's help with an ugly custody dispute she had been having with her mother.
Kathy's mother had filed paperwork in court seeking visitation rights with Kathy's kids.
Clark said the battle began right after Kathy banned her mother from having anything to do with her grandchildren. The reason? Her mother's live-in boyfriend, Eric Fagan, had become obsessed with her 5-year-old daughter, Nicole.
She believed in the heart of her heart that he was involved in very sick things. The things that they were saying was very alarming.
Kathy believed that Fagan's disturbing infatuation with Nicole could have led him to kidnap her daughter.
Eric was, without question, obsessed with getting Nicole. Kathy was terrified, of him. She felt that he would stop at nothing to get the children.
Clark was convinced that Eric Fagan was responsible for the cold-blooded murder of Kathy Paternoster.
Kathy was positive that Eric was going to either kidnap Nicole himself or have someone else kidnap the child. She was sure of it and wanted us to stop it. And I believe we did stop it, and unfortunately, I believe that that's why he killed her.
Clark persuaded detectives to look closely at Eric Fagan.
I told the sheriff's department and the investigators flat out that if you dig into this, you're going to find out that Eric was responsible for this.
When detectives dug deeper into Logan Clark's story, they discovered that Kathy Paternoster and her boyfriend Carl First had planned on publicly accusing Eric Fagan of abuse in open court, an allegation that would have destroyed Fagan's career. Carl told police that he believed the timing of the shooting was no coincidence. Kathy's boyfriend, Carl First.
We were going to take him to court November 2nd, and we never made it.
Kathy was murdered just 3 weeks before the court date. The motive for the crime was suddenly coming into focus. Fagan was a prominent attorney, and the allegations of abuse could have destroyed his career. Could the vicious attack have been a twisted attempt to silence the accusations against him? Police had a lot of questions for Eric Fagan, and they were determined to track him down for answers. When investigators showed up to question Fagan, the 54-year-old attorney immediately hired a lawyer. Deputy DA John Thomas.
He basically told the detectives when they went to question him to talk to his attorney. The fact that he was unwilling to cooperate with their investigation threw up some more red flags.
Police discovered that at the time of Kathy's murder, Eric Fagan and Kathy's mother had suddenly broken up. In fact, Fagan had been living with a new girlfriend. When police questioned Fagan's girlfriend about the night of Kathy's murder, she appeared to be extremely nervous, and her answers seemed rehearsed.
Police believed when they were interviewing the girlfriend that the girlfriend had been coached by Mr. Fagan.
Detective Robert Terrell.
She told us that Eric had arrived at her house that night at about 7 o'clock. We asked her if he had left at any time, and she told us that he had left to go to the store and that he was gone maybe an hour and a half.
But as investigators turned up the pressure, her story began to unravel.
As we quizzed her more, she indicated that she had gone to bed, fallen asleep, and she really wasn't sure what time he got back. Well, his only alibi was with his girlfriend.
Eric Fagan's alibi was shaky.
We thought that the girlfriend was covering for him.
As detectives looked closer, a search of her home turned up a critical clue. Detective Pierre Galvez.
When we searched the girlfriend's house, latex gloves were found, similar to the one that was found at the crime scene.
Suspicions were raised even more when detectives checked to see if Fagan had any guns registered in his name.
Eric Fagan purchased 2 guns that summer.
Investigators were able to determine that one of the guns was a .38 caliber revolver.
Both Carl and Kathy were shot with a .38.
Police knew that Fagan wouldn't tell them anything about his new pistol, so they asked Kathy's mother to help with the investigation. They secretly recorded a call she made to her ex-boyfriend to see if he would tell her the location of his .38 caliber revolver.
The line was recorded, and she asked him about the firearms that he had. He told her that he did have 2, but that one was stolen.
A number of months ago, somebody get him and stole the gun.
But Eric Fagan had never contacted police about the stolen gun nor filed a burglary report. Police suspected that he was lying about the break-in and his missing revolver. Investigators turned to the neighbors for help.
They ended up talking to a bunch of his neighbors in San Diego and asked them if there was any burglaries that they knew about in the area, and all the neighbors said no.
Police believe that Fagan's story about the stolen gun was a lie, designed to cover up the fact that he had gotten rid of it after the murder. The evidence against Eric Fagan was stacking up.
They had a lot of circumstantial evidence against him. The missing gun, the fact that he wasn't able to account for his whereabouts for the entire evening of the murder. He had motive.
Authorities believe that all the evidence pointed to Eric Fagan, but when they presented the case to prosecutors, they were bitterly disappointed.
We thought we had a pretty good circumstantial case, but the DA thought that we didn't.
The next big break on the case after this.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Detectives knew they had a wealth of circumstantial evidence linking Fagan to the murder of Kathy Paternoster. But if they wanted to charge him with murder, they needed hard evidence connecting him to the crime. Deputy DA John Thomas.
There was a lack of concrete evidence. There was no physical evidence linking him to the scene.
It appeared as if Eric Fagan was going to get away with murder.
Investigators did believe that.
Detective Robert Terrell.
I was upset. It was very frustrating for me as an investigator. There was no doubt in our mind that Eric Fagan was our suspect.
Without physical evidence tying Fagan to the crime scene, police were forced to look at other potential suspects, while Fagan remained a free man. Kathy's boyfriend, Carl First.
I spent a lot of time looking over my shoulder.
Kathy's entire family lived in fear. Kathy's daughter, Nicole Costa.
It was tough. I just was concerned that Eric Fagan would make an appearance in my life again.
When the investigation into Eric Fagan stalled, Kathy's loved ones were outraged. They believed he had gotten away with murder. Kathy's best friend, Della Slagle-Keenan.
I thought it was obvious that Eric did it. It was just shocking when they didn't make an arrest.
They were losing hope that her killer would ever be brought to justice. Kathy's daughter, Carla First.
There's a certain point where you just realize it's probably never going to be solved.
Kathy's family felt they would never get the answers they deserved.
It was frustrating, and I'd always imagine being able to tell the person how I resented them for taking away my mom.
Investigators theorized that Eric Fagan had murdered Kathy and attempted to kill Carl to cover up allegations that he was abusing Kathy's 5-year-old daughter, Nicole. Kathy's daughter, Nicole Costa.
He probably did it to protect himself for the accusations.
But despite an extensive investigation, the district attorney's office couldn't find enough evidence to move forward with any charges.
I thought they were going to solve it. I never thought it was going to become a cold case. It was heartbreaking.
As months turned into years, Kathy's family and her best friend, Della Slagle, refused to give up on Kathy's case. And their hopes for justice were renewed when the San Bernardino Sheriff's Department opened a cold case unit in 2008. Kathy's best friend, Della Slagle-Keenu.
I was at the San Bernardino website. I saw the cold case section. I clicked on it. I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to write a letter. It's worth a shot. I was hoping that perhaps they would find the missing puzzle piece.
Sergeant Casey Giles was intrigued by Della's email.
It said, "My name's Della. I'm a friend of Kathy Paternoster. She was killed in 1989, and we've known all along that it was Eric Fagan who killed her. And we ask that you guys look into this."
For Sergeant Giles, this unsolved crime seemed to be the perfect case for the newly formed cold case unit.
Well, she sent it at the perfect time. We were looking for cases. So I went and pulled the file and read it, and I thought it was a great case back then. I was kind of perplexed why it wasn't closed, so we ran with it.
Once Giles looked at the case file, he was struck by what he learned.
It was obvious who did this and why they did it. Eric Fagan's the only person that had motive to kill Kathy. And he had a very clear, strong motive.
Sergeant Giles believed that a tremendous injustice had been done.
The fact that he had been running around, living his life without paying for what he did, it really weighed on me. I was determined to solve this.
Convinced of Fagan's guilt, Sergeant Giles worked diligently to uncover the evidence needed to put him behind bars.
Well, for the most part, the case was solved. It was just a matter of tying up all the loose ends, to dot all the I's, cross all the T's, and try to get a little bit more physical evidence that would implicate Eric to this crime.
Sergeant Giles told Della that he wouldn't rest until Kathy's killer was behind bars.
He actually cared. He genuinely cared about solving this.
For the first time in years, there was a glimmer of hope for Kathy's loved ones.
I was hoping that they found that piece of the puzzle they've been looking for all the prior years. I was hoping that the new detectives had new eyes and that they would put it together.
But launching a new investigation brought mixed emotions for some members of Kathy's family. Kathy's daughter, Nicole Costa.
I definitely was happy that someone was taking a new look at this. But it was still a little scary because now we're reopening not just a case, but old wounds.
Sergeant Giles knew the stakes were high.
It was extremely difficult on Kathy's daughters. When I spoke to them, this was something they live with daily. It was a heavy burden on them, and you know, obviously they lost their mother at a young age and having to live with this without any closure.
The cold case team started by re-interviewing everyone involved with the original investigation, including Eric Fagan's son. The young man told detectives about a strange incident that had taken place in the days leading up to Kathy's murder.
One day they went to lunch together, and they happened to walk past a costume store. His father went inside and he followed him in and watched his father purchase a big fake beard.
Fagan's son told detectives that his father's purchase at the costume shop seemed strange at the time.
He thought it was highly unusual. It was completely out of Eric's character to buy something like that. He never dressed up for Halloween. He never wore costumes. It was very weird for him to purchase that.
But it was what his father said to him after buying the beard that stayed with him. Deputy DA John Thomas.
He asked his father, "Why are you purchasing this fake beard?" And his father told him that it was to kidnap Nicole.
It was just, again, one more piece of the puzzle that put Eric there.
Fagan's son was able to provide police with a description of the fake beard his father had bought.
We showed him some photographs of a beard that had been purchased back in 89 from that same costume shop, and he identified that as being a similar type beard as to what his father had bought.
Investigators pressed Fagan's son for more information. They asked him if he remembered a suspicious, unreported robbery that had taken place at his father's home, the one in which his father's .38-caliber revolver had been conveniently stolen. Detectives had never believed Eric Fagan's story.
Eric's son was living with him at the time. He certainly didn't know of any break-in to where they were living, and his dad never said a word about this supposed break-in.
The information Fagan's son gave them piqued Sergeant Giles' interest. But it was one of the first clues the original investigators had found that he hoped would break the case wide open.
One piece of evidence that stood out was a latex glove that was found down the street from the crime scene where witnesses saw the suspect running.
In the 19 years since the crime had taken place, DNA had become the gold standard in forensic science. By 2008, testing could analyze even the small amount of genetic material the killer had left inside the latex glove found near the Paternoster crime scene. Investigators used that sample to create a DNA profile of Kathy's killer. Police got a warrant for Fagan's DNA to see if it was a match. And when Sergeant Giles showed up at his door to collect it, Fagan was brash enough to talk with him.
So my question to you is, did you kill Kathy?
Of course not.
You're looking at the wrong guy.
He figured he could talk his way out of it, because essentially he had gotten out of it the first time. But at the same time, I could tell the wheels were spinning in his head. He was definitely nervous that we were back.
Even though he appeared unsettled by the investigator's visit, Eric Fagan believed he would never be arrested for Kathy's murder.
I think he believed that time had gone by and he believed he had gotten away with murder.
Would Fagan's DNA be a match to the latex glove the killer had left behind after the vicious attack? It appeared the entire investigation hinged on the results of the testing.
The profile matched Eric Fagan.
After years of suspicion, investigators finally had the concrete evidence they needed to arrest Eric Fagan.
I was ecstatic. When we received the DNA results, we knew we had enough to prove to a jury beyond any reasonable doubt that Mr. Fagan committed the murder.
Sergeant Casey Giles.
This was the long-lost missing piece that we needed to really put the puzzle and tie everything together.
On October 21st, 2009, Kathy's daughters finally heard the words they had been longing to hear for 20 years. Eric Fagan had been arrested and charged with their mother's murder. Kathy's daughter, Carla First.
I just started crying instantly. I have never had that many emotions all at once.
On November 13th, 2012, the trial of Eric Fagan began.
We had the motive, we had the opportunity, and we had the DNA on the glove.
But Eric Fagan still had one more cruel trick up his sleeve. On the day Nicole was set to take the stand, Fagan made a move that shocked the entire courtroom.
Fagan announced to the court that he wanted to fire his attorney and represent himself.
For years, Fagan had been a successful local attorney, but his motivation for representing himself appeared to have nothing to do with his legal prowess.
That day was the day that Nicole was going to testify, and I think that he wanted to be the one to question Nicole. I was shocked.
Kathy's daughter, Nicole Costa.
I felt disgusted that he would do that.
It was almost like victimizing the victim again.
Nicole braced herself for her day in court. She would be face to face with the man who murdered her mother, a man who had terrorized her as a child.
I didn't want to do it or be there, but I wanted to, on behalf of my mom.
Intent on getting justice for her mother, Nicole confronted her greatest fear, Eric Fagan.
It was very hard. Waiting in the room before approaching the stand was probably the worst.
It took a lot of strength for her to get up there and face Fagan the way that she did.
When Nicole confidently took the stand, it was clear that Fagan's plan backfired.
Once I got in there, I wasn't scared of him anymore.
It was almost surreal. You had a suspect questioning one of the witnesses and the victim, the surviving victim on the case.
In a last-ditch effort to save himself, Eric Fagan testified in his own defense. He desperately tried to explain away the evidence.
He basically tried to convince the jury that we had the wrong guy.
But his testimony failed to convince the jury. Detective Ryan Ford.
Eric Fagan was overconfident and arrogant while on the stand. His story was full of holes.
This was a man who took an oath to be an attorney and help people. And instead of helping people, he used his knowledge and his position to victimize people, to basically get away with murder for all these years.
On December 21st, 2012, 78-year-old Eric Fagan was found guilty of murdering Kathy Paternoster and attempting to murder Carl First. He was sentenced to 30 years behind bars. Kathy's best friend, Della Slagle-Kinu.
We all started crying. We finally got justice after all that time.
Very emotional. It was what we were looking for.
To this day, Kathy's daughter, Nicole, is deeply troubled by the motive for Eric Fagan's actions.
I feel a little guilty only because of the obsession that Eric had for me.
Kathy's daughters overcame an extremely traumatic childhood. They were forced to witness the death of their mother and then had to live in fear of her killer for decades. But somehow, they found the strength to move forward with their lives. Kathy's boyfriend, Carl First.
I think they pick up their strength from their mother. She really cared and loved them. And she was willing to do anything to make their lives good.
Kathy's daughters still have fond memories of their loving mother.
She's in my mind every day.
I really would have loved to have had the opportunity to know what it would have been like to have my mom around.
Carl First still has a daily reminder of the vicious attack he suffered at the hands of Eric Fagan. One of the bullets he was hit with that night remains lodged under his arm. Doctors can't remove it because they fear that might cause paralysis. Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to follow, rate, and review. And if you want more information on today's case, visit facebook.com/paulazanofficial or just click the link in the episode description. I'm Paula Zahn. Please join us again next Wednesday when we're back on the case, the podcast.